My name's Swenson, Kathy Swenson, and I'm a journalist. I do what they call human interest stories. And I'm just about to do something I never believed I'd ever do. I spent nearly a year on a story, and I'm just about to tear up every damn page of 5 notebooks that contain what's probably the best story I'll ever get. And right now I'm wondering if I'm not crazy. I live in Vermont, the most beautiful state in the USA. And I bought some fresh eggs one day from a small farmstead on Lake Champlain. And there was something about the man. His eyes, mainly. They weren't farmer's eyes. He didn't even stand like a farmer. And he had this strange accent. I started asking around. And before you could say snap, I was hooked on my mystery man and was booking a plane ticket to London. I'm not sure that I got all the story, but I've got enough to get me a nice fat fee from any magazine I choose. But there was a kind of lesson in the story, and I came to the conclusion that it would be wrong to publish it. Not wrong, maybe, but a cruel use of something. Oh, God, sometimes I wish I was a man I could just put the knife in without giving a damn. But I write better than any man I know. Me and Mary McCarthy both. If it starts anywhere, it starts in a small village in Scotland called Borah Glen, and a man called John Rennie. He was a dour, silent man who had had his face disfigured by a piece of shrapnel in the First World War. Strong-minded and intelligent, he had little time for his son, a rather diffident little boy who was in awe of his father, maybe frightened even. But it seems that all that changed one particular summer's day, when the boy was about 9 years old.
Kenny! Come over here! Hold the door open, laddie. Give me some light. Here you are, then. Take it to your mother. Tell her I'll pluck it later. You ain't frightened of a dead hen, are you, laddie?
Yes, father.
I see. Now come straight back here when you've handed over the bird.
Yes, father.
Right, laddie. Put your hands round its neck and do what I did. Go on. Well done, well done. I'll take it to the kitchen. And I want to see you in my study. Now wash your hands first. Come in. What do you think of my face, laddie?
Here.
I'm sorry about it, sir.
You know how I got it?
In the Great War, sir. A piece of a shell.
Ugly, isn't it? I'm proud of that scar, laddie. Look at the wee box on the table. Go on. Open it. You know what it is?
It's a medal, sir.
It's a military cross, and that's why I'm proud of my ugly face. The king himself gave it to me at Buckingham Palace. Your mother was with me. Do you know why I'm showing it to you today?
No, sir.
Because when I asked you if you were scared of a dead hen, you told me the truth. And because you wrung the chicken's neck when I told you to, you were scared, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
And you're not scared to do it again, are you?
No, sir.
Would you do it again if I told you to, right now?
I would, sir.
Then take the medal. It's yours now. And don't ever be scared again. Not of anything, not any man.
Johnny Rennie often mentioned this incident when he was an adult, so I guess it was significant for him. He gathered up just enough credits to get a university place. He took his law finals twice and just passed on the second attempt. He had 2 years with a firm of Edinburgh solicitors. And at the end of the 2 years, he resigned from the practice and joined the SAS. The Special Air Services. When an unofficial request came through from the Ministry of Defense for an officer with certain qualifications that were not put in writing, he had been offered the transfer to the Foreign Office and SIS, MI6, the Secret Intelligence Service. I guessed that John Hamish Rennie had been involved in what the CIA calls dirty tricks, and I chatted up an SIS office type called Roger Williams, who'd been on a job with Rennie some years back just outside Hamburg in Germany.
Is he dead, Rennie?
Of course he's dead. I killed him. That's what we were here for.
What are we going to do with him?
We'll leave him here.
He could lie for days before somebody finds him.
So what? He's dead and that's all that matters.
I've never understood you, Johnny. None of you people. How the hell do you sleep at night?
Go through his clothes and see if there's anything you want for the office.
Here's Hartman's wallet, Johnny. Do you want it?
Why should I?
There's nearly 3,000 D-marks in it.
I don't steal from dead bodies, Roger. Put it back where it came from. We'd better get moving. Let's get back to the car. I'd like a bath at your place.
Don't you ever get sick of it, Johnny?
Hmm?
All the violence.
It isn't all violence. In fact, there's very little violence.
But all the messing about. Finding out how to pressure them, trying to find out if they go after young boys or underage girls. All the perversions. Filth that people get up to.
It isn't always that sort of thing. That's just your nasty mind. Why do you always have to let your heart bleed for the villains?
Is that what they tell you when they're training you?
I didn't need telling. It's my country I'm protecting. A damn good country, the best in the world, in my opinion. You don't keep your freedom if you won't fight for it.
It doesn't worry you, then. The dirty tricks.
I'm not employed to worry, my friend. I've got every faith in the people above me who decide these things. Whatever they give me to do, I do.
And due process of law, that doesn't count for anything, then?
These sort of things, no. It's just expensive barristers running up the bills. 100,000 quid of the public's money to try and prove that a well-known terrorist really is a terrorist? It would be laughable if it wasn't so serious.
Do you never have any doubts?
The people who give me my assignments are responsible for the security of the country. If they say that's what is needed, I do it, to the very best of my ability.
You'd carry out any order they gave you?
Of course.
Well, say they're wrong sometime and some innocent guy ends up floating in the canal.
Well, that's not for me to decide. I don't know everything they know.
So even if you knew the guy was innocent, you'd knock him off?
If those were my orders, yes. They don't go after innocent men. Why the hell should they?
Well, maybe he's innocent, but they just don't like him, or maybe they're mistaken.
Too bad.
Do you sleep at nights okay?
Like a log.
They must love you, Johnny.
They respect me. And I respect them. Loyalty counts for a lot. Chaps like you are always full of doubts. Never sort yourself out. You should remember what Cromwell told his men.
What was that?
Know what you fight for, and love what you know.
Sounds ghastly. When are you going back to London?
Have you got a Canadian passport I can use?
United States do.
Okay. In that case, I'll go tomorrow.
Hey. Fancy a night out with a couple of pretty girls?
No, thanks.
You still carrying a torch for Mary?
No way.
Let's go eat at the Four Seasons.
Okay, let's do that.
I discovered that the Mary they mentioned was Johnny Rennie's ex-wife. I had the feeling that she might provide a real insight into this man. But that was easier said than done. It took 2 months of seemingly hopeless meetings before she trusted me. And even then, she was pretty cautious. You obviously still like him, and that's not how ex-wives usually feel after a divorce.
Well,
Well, it was my fault, I suppose.
What happened?
Oh, I was very stupid. Unforgivably stupid. I had a ridiculous affair with a man. In fact, call it an affair is an exaggeration. I slept with him just once.
But you must have liked the man, or you wouldn't have slept with him.
I didn't, I'm afraid. Well, he was one of those professional charmers. Dimples, wavy hair and a cleft chin. He carried my groceries from the supermarket to my car one day. Paid me a few compliments and... well, that's all it should have been. But he was there the next week. Quite openly waiting for me. And the next week. I had coffee with him in a restaurant. It became a sort of routine. In the end, I went to bed with him at his place. And afterwards, he talked vaguely about marriage and my little girls. I was horrified. I couldn't get away quickly enough. There are some people who always get found out. I'm one of them.
What happened?
Well, Johnny told me about 3 days later that he knew. I don't know how. But he knew the man's name and more about him than I did.
Was he angry or hurt?
He wasn't either. Just cool and calm, asking me questions. Did I love the man? Did he love me? Was he going to stand by me after the divorce? But it was only then that I realised he was going to divorce me.
You didn't feel he was unreasonable?
I suggested we could stay together at arm's length, so to speak, for the girl's sake. It was pointless. I'd broken my vows. I'd committed a marital offence. That was it. It was like arguing with a mathematician by the square on the hypotenuse. He made it sound so inevitable.
So why do you still like him?
Well, it was entirely my fault. I mean, however you look at it, I was stupid and deceitful. Not him. Oh, I'd no complaints about him to justify what I did. He was honest. Good husband and a good father. He was tough and cynical about the rest of the world. But not about me and the girls. He was gentle and kind. All my women friends envied me.
So why did he insist on a divorce?
I let him down. And from then on, I wasn't special for him. The girls, yes. But me, no. I was just part of the world. He still owns the house, but it's mine for £5 a year for the rest of my life. Half his earnings come to me, and he volunteered it as part of the court judgment.
And the girls? What do they think?
Well, he saw them every week. And that was as much as they saw of him before the divorce. They loved him. They still do.
When did you last see him?
I don't talk about that with anyone.
Do you ever hear from him?
Would you like a cup of tea? Or would you prefer coffee?
There were two guys who were obviously important to Rennie. One was his immediate boss, Painter, a very senior SIS man, and Fredericks, who was a liaison man between SIS and the Foreign Office. A real Whitehall type, based in the Foreign Office itself.
Fredericks? No, Painter's here with me now. I don't know. 15-20 minutes, perhaps. Right, yes, I'll tell him. Will you phone Hendricks when we've finished?
Mm-hmm.
Where were we? Ah, yes. Paris and Mason. Have French security been cooperating?
Hard to tell, Freddy. They haven't done anything, but I don't think that's their fault. There's just nothing to go on. Except for the woman who thinks she saw him wave down a taxi, nobody saw a thing.
Is there any significance in the fact that they called Le Figaro rather than Le Monde?
No. We're not even sure they didn't call Le Monde. We don't ask, or it might show that we're worried.
And all they said was what?
They just said, we've got Mason, and gave the number on his ID card.
And it was said in French?
Yes. The voice analysis said there were Turkish overtones, whatever that means.
If somebody's lifted him, what does he know?
Well, he's been on all sorts of things over the last 5 years. Depends on who's got him as to what he could give them that could be useful.
What was he actually doing in Paris?
Trying to patch up things with his wife. She'd started divorce proceedings against him.
On what grounds?
Irretrievable breakdown of marriage, nothing spectacular.
Has anybody interviewed her?
No. We don't think she even knows he's not around. He wasn't staying with her. He'd taken a room for a couple of weeks.
Has his room been searched thoroughly?
No, we just asked for it to be sealed, and that's what they've done. We didn't want to look too concerned.
Will the French keep it quiet?
Yes, I think they will. I asked my opposite number to put the lid on it. He was very cooperative. Well, they don't like this sort of thing any more than we do. They're not recognising officially that he's even a missing person. Why? The FO getting the wind up?
I'd say touchy rather than windy. But they're pros. They're used to the ups and downs.
Where will you be tonight?
At the Travellers until about 7, then at home.
Mm-hmm. Town or country home?
Town. Keep in touch, no matter how little there is. If he's been lifted, we'll hear from them before long. Oh, we'd better check if we've got any political Turks in jail.
Oh, we have. 7 of them. They're in the scrubs. The governor'd love to see the back of them.
Do you ever get tired of all this, Hugo?
Of what exactly?
The contrast. The smooth diplomats on the surface and the violence underneath it all.
I sometimes wish I was a diplomat instead of what I am.
Do you think the public has any idea of what goes on in their name?
Oh, I don't imagine they think about it for a moment. They've got their mortgages to worry about, the green fly on the roses, the kids' education and next year's holiday on the Algarve.
Sometimes when Angie's giving one of our routine dinner parties at the flat, I look at them. Ambassadors and first secretaries, MPs and visiting senators and minor dictators. And I'm terribly tempted to say out loud what their governments are really doing. Financing dissidents to stir up trouble, training and arming assassins to murder some politician of a rival party or an unfriendly country, infiltration to destabilize a whole country. And for what? A few years of power or money in a Swiss bank account. Tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of their countrymen killed or starving in some banana republic. And they sit there, Hugo, as smooth as they come. Oh, it doesn't seem credible. They're such bloody hypocrites. All of them. Us included.
Well, maybe you should come back into SIS, Freddy. There's no hypocrisy for us. We do the dirty deeds, and that's the end of it. No philosophizing.
Sometimes I'd like to leave it all and be a monk. In some silent order, preferably.
You'd always be arguing with the abbot. Oh, you need a holiday, Freddy. That's all that's the matter with you. See you tomorrow.
Come in, Hugo, and sit down, do.
Thanks.
The minister's been told. Mm-hmm. Wanted to know what SIS were doing about it. I told him there was nothing to go on, that it might even be a hoax. Suggested very, very diplomatically that the embassy could keep a watching brief on it. Now, why don't you send somebody over from here? Make it a sort of freelance assignment, never contacts the embassy and plays it very low key.
I've already told someone to stand by.
Who?
John Rennie.
Isn't there anybody else?
No, not as suitable. You've never given Rennie his due. Why don't you?
Oh, God knows. I can't put my finger on it.
Well, there must be something.
He's such a zombie, Hugo.
What's that mean in Foreign Office semantics?
Inflexible, unimaginative, and a thug.
For inflexible, read patriotic. For unimaginative, loyal. And for thug, well, it's thugs he has to deal with most of the time.
But he's so right-wing. He's virtually a fascist.
Nonsense. Rennie isn't interested in any kind of politics, not even vaguely. You know, we've all sworn and signed to protect Queen and country from their enemies. Well, the only thing you don't like about him is that he actually means it. Every word of it.
He's so bloody naive.
No, just loyal. Oh, maybe a little too black and white in his judgments, but he's utterly dependable. And that's more than you can say for some of your Foreign Office friends.
Oh, God, don't let's go over Burgess and Maclean again.
Oh, I don't mean them. I mean some of your contemporaries. Oh, very sophisticated, very intellectual, and I wouldn't trust them an inch.
Oh, you're quite right, of course. We're just swapping prejudices. I guess what I'm looking for doesn't exist.
Well, with those complex, searching minds, they'll never be totally committed. Rennie knows what he's doing, and he does it well. I only wish I'd more like him. I'd sleep a lot better at nights.
Oh, what a funny world. When did it all start getting out of hand?
I think when they killed Jack Kennedy. It was like some kind of signal to the whole world that if that was possible, then anything was possible. It was a sort of a benchmark.
Hmm. Cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war.
Hmm.
Let's have a drink.
Come in. Ah, Johnny. Sit down. Well, have you looked through Mason's P-file?
Yes.
What do you think?
She's obviously a tart, and he's crazy to be running after her.
Then why do you think he's gone missing?
If it wasn't for the message to the newspaper, I'd have said he's just gone off to lick the wounds from his marriage.
Mm-hmm.
The message doesn't tell us a thing, but giving his ID number could be significant.
Hmm. Well, I think you'd better go to Paris and see what you can find out. Maybe that stupid little bitch of his can give you a clue.
I'll go over this afternoon. Can you clear some money and tickets for me from facilities in the next hour?
Right. And keep in touch.
Mason was an SIS field officer, and the girl they called a tart was Mason's wife, Fleur Mason. She was 26 and very, very pretty. A French girl who married Mason without any idea of what he did for a living.
Mrs. Mason?
Who are you?
A colleague of your husband, Mrs. Mason. Could I speak to you for a few moments?
There is no point. I won't change my mind. I told Arisa.
It's not about your domestic problems, Mrs. Mason.
I don't understand.
I'm trying to contact him. I think it could help.
You'd better come in.
Thank you.
Do sit down, please. What is it you want?
My name's Rennie, Mrs. Mason. John Rennie. As I said, I'm a colleague of Harry's, and I'm trying to contact him.
He doesn't live here. He's got a room somewhere near the Gare du Nord.
Yes, I've been there, but he's not there.
Well, maybe he was asleep or shopping or something.
When did you see him last?
It was nearly 2 weeks ago.
Did he seem okay?
Do you know him well?
Well, I used to. I haven't seen him for a couple of years.
He was upset because of our situation.
The divorce proceedings?
Yes.
How upset was he?
He was very upset. You said you were a colleague of his. Does that mean you do the same kind of work that he does?
Tell me what you think he does.
He always says he works for the Foreign Office, the English Foreign Office, but I think it is more than that.
In what way more?
I think he did secret work.
What makes you think that?
He was always leaving me, going off suddenly. Sometimes I didn't hear from him for weeks. He brought me back things from foreign places. He was away more than he was with me. And when he confronted me about going out with other men, it was obvious that I had been watched very carefully. He knew so much.
Did he threaten you?
Yes. He said he would kill me if I left him.
Did you mention a threat to any of your men friends?
No.
Would you mind telling me why you wanted a divorce?
He put his job before me. He left me alone for weeks on end. I was lonely, so I went out with other people.
And maybe Harry was lonely too, wishing he was with you.
He could have changed his job and been with me every day. He preferred his job to me.
In our kind of job, we have no choice but to go off at a moment's notice. We can't tell our wives or friends where we are going or what we are doing. It isn't just Harry.
He could have another job. He's got a degree?
It's not just a job, Mrs. Mason. It's a calling. A bit like a priest, I suppose.
Maybe, but priests don't marry.
Can I ask you one more question?
Yes.
The men you went around with, were they all Frenchmen?
All except one.
What nationality was he?
He was an Arab, but I don't know which Arab country he came from.
Can you remember his name?
His first name was Kalim. I don't know his other name.
What was he like? Was he a tough sort of fellow?
No. He was charming. Very attractive. Very wealthy. And he was here on a visit. Not at all tough. He was well educated. I think he had been to Cambridge or Oxford. He spoke perfect English and French.
Thanks for your help, Mrs. Mason.
What do you think's happened to him?
I don't know. That's what I've got to find out.